3 years ago, Mexican President Felipe Calderón launched a crackdown on the country's drug cartels, and in recent months, drug-related violence has escalated, even as authorities have made some high-profile arrests. Maybe because they have made high-profile arrests. Joining me now is Ken Ellingwood. He covers the Mexican drug war for the LA Times. He's written a book called Hard Line, Life and Death on the U.S.-Mexico Border. He joins us by phone. You're in Mexico now, Ken?
Yes, I'm in Mexico City.
Thank you for joining us. So what's driving the recent increase in violence? Is this the cycle? Once you disrupt the cartels, you leave a little chaos at the top, and blood fills that chaos?
Well, that's what the government is trying to sell the public in promoting its war on the drug cartels. The government stance is that look, we're taking out a lot of the big guys, we're disrupting their drug trafficking operations, and that's created mayhem at the street level, and it's bad guy on bad guy. That's essentially the message that the government has put out. It's of course more complicated than that. There is some truth to what the government portrays, but there are other factors for the violence as well.
And the number, I believe, you cite is over the last 3 years, more than 15,000 people have died in drug-related violence?
Yeah, and that's a pretty conservative number. We have gone to lengths throughout our coverage of this drug war to use the most conservative numbers that are available because we want to be on the safe side. It's probably over 16,000, and just this month alone into the new year, we're looking at more than 600 people dead in drug violence, mainly in two northern states.
Any idea of the breakdown? How many of those are either soldiers for the cartels or employees versus people caught in the crossfire or law enforcement?
There have been all categories. The main number are people who appear to be involved in the drug trade in some fashion. The style of killing, which has been phenomenally brutal in the last 3 years, is a style of killing that the drug gangs use against each other. The large majority of the victims have been killed in gang on gang violence. There have been some soldiers killed. There have been many police officers killed, and there have been some innocents that have been caught in, for example, shootouts in the streets, which have broken out in places like Ciudad Juarez on the U.S. border.
And the Mexican public, are they scared? Are they weary? Are they demanding this stop?
They're scared, they're weary, and in places where there's a lot of this violence, they are demanding that it stop. If you go to a place on the border like Juarez, where there's been a phenomenal amount of violence in the past 2 years, and which remains Mexico's most dangerous and deadly city, and in fact, by some measures, it has the highest murder rate in the world. People are absolutely just beside themselves. They're desperate for some stop. They have seen soldiers pour into their city by the thousands. Calderón sent out the Mexican military around the country to really lead his crackdown. And in recent weeks, in Juarez, he has pulled the troops back and replaced them with thousands of newly trained federal police. But depending on where you travel around the country, the mood is different. I would say overall, the mood in Mexico is that people are very scared of these drug gangs, weary of the rising death toll. But also not very eager to sort of join in. There's no social force out there. There's no real social mobilization in favor of taking down the drug cartels.
Now, sometimes, especially in Central and South American country, the church serves that function.
Correct. The church has been a big, you know, social and moral leader in a number of other places, and it has a great moral force in Mexico as well. But here, the church, when it comes to drug trafficking and organized crime, the church has taken a very hands-off approach, in part because of fear, in part because in a number of these communities where drug trafficking goes on, the traffickers are quite generous with their with their tithing and have given to churches.
Although I have read some of your articles about the occasional outspoken clergyman who has to now spend on an armored vehicle, for instance.
Right. I mean, there have been some cases, including a clergyman up in the state of Durango, where for speaking out. In this case, he mentioned that everybody knows where a fellow named Chapo Guzman is hiding. Chapo Guzman is the leader of one of the biggest cartels in Mexico and is Mexico's most wanted drug suspect. After saying this, he was threatened and then he had to be. Basically rescued by a helicopter from a remote town after authorities discovered that he was soon to be the target of an assassination attempt. And they pulled him out of there and gave him protection. So in the few instances where clergy have spoken out, there have been, repercussions.
Now, last month, a drug kingpin named Arturo Beltran Leyva was killed in a shootout with police. Is that going to be a tipping point in the immediate wake of that? Did things get a lot worse?
Well, we're seeing a lot of violence in the state that he had been affiliated with. The state of Sinaloa is in the northwest of Mexico. It's the long-standing kind of drug, cradle of drug trafficking in Mexico. He used to be affiliated with the fellow I just mentioned, Chapo Guzman. They were allies, worked together. They broke in 2008 and began to fight with each other, and that led to a lot of the violence. Now Beltran Leyva is out of the picture. We have seen a lot of killings in Sinaloa in the past several weeks, which suggests that there is some pretty violent jockeying going on for either within his group or against the remnants of his group by other trafficking groups. But even Mexican authorities acknowledged in within hours of announcing that he had been killed in this raid that one of the results may well be a spike in violence, and it seems to be coming true.
Now, what drugs are we talking about exactly?
We're talking about primarily, we're talking about marijuana, we're talking about cocaine, we're talking about heroin, we're talking about methamphetamines. And depending on which area of the country you're talking about, the drug that is moved through that area is different. And some cartels have worked on kind of their own specialties. But, all of these are moving north. They're all going to the United States. There's very little trafficking here that's going anywhere else, although there is some increasing trafficking by Mexican groups of drugs from South America to Europe, for example, and they're using Africa as a way station to get there. But really what we're talking about is drugs moving north from Colombia, Peru, through Mexico, and on into the United States.
Is the United States spending massively to try to curb the drug trade in our southern neighbor?
The United States is spending. The two countries a couple of years ago announced a new initiative. It was called the Mérida Initiative. It's an aid program for in under which the United States is providing over 3 years $1.3 billion in security assistance for Mexico. That's not money, but it's goods and training. It's equipment. There's some helicopters in there. There's things like vests and sort of police gear. There's computer equipment. There's a lot of training for police. There's a lot of training for court personnel. The idea in this package is not just to give Mexico a blank check, nor to give it cash, but to give it the capacity and the means for actually improving its law enforcement system, which is abysmal. I mean, Mexico has a bloated and outdated court system. It doesn't work. The police are poorly trained as a rule. There has been a big push in the last couple of years to improve the federal police. But this is the money, or this is the assistance, I should say, that the U.S. is providing Mexico. Mexico says, well, it's not very much, but, you know, we'll take what we can get. What Mexico would really like to see out of the United States is more effort to clamp down on the weapons that come from the United States across the border into Mexico, and as well a crackdown on the money that moves back across the border into Mexico.
This is Mike Pesca on WNYC, and for Leonard Lopate, I'm speaking with Ken Ellingwood, who covers the Mexican drug wars for the LA Times. Now, when in reading your stories, often it's the Mexican Navy or Marines who conduct the raids because, as you were saying, local police are either bloated or often on the take. Has that been a successful way to combat the drug trade?
It has and it hasn't. It's been successful in that they have been able to conduct a lot of operations and raids and make some arrests and, you know, difficult arrests under difficult circumstances. The army, or I should say the military in general in Mexico, remains a respected institution. People here look up to the military in a way that they do not view the police. People here have a very low opinion of the police in general. They don't trust the police, and generally that's distrust that's well deserved. The police have for a long time been not very professional. They're often on the take. They're often serving even as foot soldiers for the drug gang. So by launching the military out there, what the idea was that you've got a new clean force that has the respect of people in the street and has the ability and the armament to take on these well-armed drug cartels. The downside has been, however, that these guys, the military I'm talking about, well, they're not police. They're not trained to be police officers. They don't know about collecting evidence. They don't know about treating suspects. And they have run roughshod over people's rights in places. And you hear, you go to some place like Juarez, for example, and you talk to people, and, you know, everybody has a story about a bad run-in with, you know, the military. They set up checkpoints, or they'll do searches. They'll do a sweep through a neighborhood. Well, they'll go into people's houses, and they'll, arrest people, detain them, question them without, you know, due process, and so without any good reason for doing so. And so in many places, while people still respect the military and they still acknowledge that there really is no better option, they're kind of fed up with them being there because they've done it with kind of a thick fist.
And you also, in some of your stories I was reading, someone poses some of the people, the bodies of the drug dealers that are killed in raids, and the analogy was made is when rival drug dealers kill each other, they send a message and they maybe photograph the bodies with literally a message. And there's some evidence that authorities have gotten into this game as well.
Yeah, when Arturo Beltran Leyva, the fellow you mentioned earlier, was killed in a government raid in December, south of Mexico City, these pictures started showing up in the Mexican newspapers, showing this guy's body covered with peso notes, the Mexican currency, the paper notes of 500 and 100 peso notes, and U.S. dollars that apparently were there in the apartment where he was killed, that are all sort of lined up alongside his body, which is, you know, bloody and torn from bullet wounds, and jewelry stacked up there too, and it was clearly a posed picture, and you know many people thought that it was posed by the very authorities who were supposed to be upholding the law as a way of sending out a message to the drug gangs. What later emerged was that some of the forensics people may have lined this all up, and they were the ones who did it. But the war has gotten, you know, increasingly nasty, and the kinds of messages that the drug cartels use to send each other, and the kind of ways that they try to send messages has gotten just extreme.
We just do have to end it there, but I want to tell everyone that I've been speaking with Ken Ellingwood, correspondent for the LA Times, about the Mexican drug wars. Thank you very much.
Pleased to be with you.